Do not confuse this with treatment or mental health advice or direction. Nothing on this podcast is made to supplement or supersede the relationship and direction of your mental health caretakers. Although David Koslowski is a licensed marriage and family therapist, he is not functioning as a certified mental health professional in this environment. And same applies to any professional who may appear on the OG Therapy Podcast. Welcome to the OG Therapy.
Are you ready? Now I'm looking right at that camera, right? Okay. Hey everybody, welcome to another episode of OG Therapy. And I got a special OG guest, Mr. K. Scott himself. What's up,
yes,
K?
Sir. What's up, man?
Not much, man. If you guys are wondering why we're not wearing t-shirts and looking all casual, it's because we were just trying to be, what's it called? Starts with a P, professional.
Yes.
We just got done doing a speaking engagement. By the way, big shout out to the UASSP here in Utah, the Utah Association of Secondary School Principals.
Yes.
We had the privilege of talking to all their secretaries.
A fun experience.
A very fun experience. But one thing that was very interesting, a lot of them came up to us afterwards, and a lot of them were big football fans.
Mm-hmm.
And one in particular came up to us, and you know, she's talking to us about her teenager.
Yes.
And they were wondering about if we thought football was safe for their little baby boy, their little angel.
Yep.
And of course, we didn't want to break the news to said football fan, this lovely woman, and tell her it's a collision sport.
Right.
So by definition, it's not safe.
Right.
However, it got us thinking. We're grabbing lunch, start talking, and then something came up. And what came up is something that pretty much everyone that's a fan of the NFL, especially if you're a fan of the Miami Dolphins, which I am always going to be a fan of the Miami Dolphins, because my older brother, Mike, played, I think, 8 or 9 years for the Miami Dolphins.
Mm-hmm.
I was a ball boy for the Miami Dolphins when I was a little kid. Spent 2 summers there working with the team. By far the coolest job I ever had.
Wow.
A lot of fun as a little kid hanging out with all the pro athletes.
I bet.
So we started talking about that. But for those of you guys who know what we're talking about, we're talking about something very tragic has been happening, has happened recently. And if any of you are aware of the damage of concussions in football or the how common concussions are in football and the recent research with CTE, obviously it's on everyone's mind. The NFL wants to keep their players safe all the way down to college, to high school, and the little league Pop Warner type football. We're all trying to do everything we can to keep the players safe. And at the same time, like I just said, it's a collision sport.
Yes.
I remember hearing growing up that, football is a contact sport. And I remember a coach of mine said, no, basketball is a contact sport.
Right.
Football is a collision sport.
Right.
Much different, like basically like a car accident. And so if you haven't heard about what's going on, we're going to be covering the situation with Tua Tagovailoa and his concussions. And there's a lot of people weighing in from former NFL players about what they think he should do with his career. Mm-hmm. Kenneth and I are going to talk about it from a little bit more personal perspective. And I have some personal connections with this story myself. So for those people who aren't familiar with the Tua story, we're going to go ahead and play a quick clip just to get you guys caught up so that you're aware. And if you're watching this on YouTube, in fact, I suggest, even if you're listening to this on the podcast, to go to our YouTube channel, OG Therapy, and check it, because there's some things you just need to see for yourself. And so, let's go ahead and run it.
And concern is growing over Dolphins quarterback Tua Tagovailoa after he suffered another concussion on the field. Tagovailoa struggled to get back up after the big hit. Now some are urging the 26-year-old star to consider stepping away from the game for good. ABC's Lara Spencer has the latest.
Moment on the football field, putting the issue of player safety front and center.
Here it is again.
Miami Dolphins star quarterback Tua Tagovailoa taking a hard shot to the head from the Buffalo Bills' DeMar Hamlin. Late in the third quarter of the primetime game, Tagovailoa running the ball, lowering his shoulder, and colliding with Hamlin.
Touch
a
shot at the 6-yard line.
Tua taking a brutal hit to the head. His hands appear to seize. An immediate sign of neurological trauma known as fencing. Rolling on his side, holding his helmet.
I was just worried about my guy. Not something that you ever want to be a part of. You know, you hope not to.
Former NFL star Dez Bryant saying, that's it. The NFL has to do the right thing. Tua has had entirely way too many concussions. Hall of Famer Shannon Sharpe agreed, saying Tagovailoa should shut it down, writing, his concussions are getting worse and worse, and he's a young man with his entire life ahead of him. And Super Bowl champion Damian Woody telling Scott Van Pelt last night,
This game of football. scheme of things. You got so much life to live. And I just, for me, it's just sickening to see this man, time and time again, being in that uncomfortable position.
The scene eerily similar to this one, the Dolphins' Thursday night football game 2 years prior. Tagovailoa thrown to the ground, smashing his head and back on the turf, leaving the field on a stretcher. He's suffered two confirmed concussions that season, and even before this most recent hit, the QB revealing he was considering retirement because of them.
Yeah, I considered it, for a time, having sat down with my family, I loved the game of football. And if I didn't, I would have quit a long time.
All right. How's it make you feel? Okay.
Just watching those hits, I'm getting squirmy about them. Like, oof, like, that's tough.
Have you ever had a concussion where you locked up like that?
Luckily, I've never had one. At least I don't think.
Yeah, I've had about seven like that.
Oh,
I've had 17 total. And by the way, everybody listening to this, I'm no way bragging, saying, oh, I've had tons of concussions. I'm just stating a simple fact because this one really hits home for me on a bunch of different levels. But having had 17 concussions, having had suffered a speech impediment for over 15 years, but my biggest concern for him is the thing that I went through, which is the mental and emotional struggles that come from the concussions. Yeah. So let's jump into this. First and foremost, my heart goes out to Tua, his family, and all the Dolphins fans, and just anyone that just follows football. And when you see something like that, if it's your own kid, you see them on the Pop Warner field, the Little League field, high school field, you see that happen. It, like you said, it makes you cringe. You know what I mean? It's like, it makes you squirm because you're watching someone's like, gosh, are they dead? Are they going to be okay? And you know, how can they come back from that? I remember growing up, my two older brothers that played in the NFL, the one, as I mentioned, played for the Miami Dolphins for a long time. I was there on the sidelines when he got knocked out unconscious, and they just gave him some smelling salts. And he smelt it, shook it, woke him up, and then he went back into the game. And that just was the standard protocol back then. And obviously the NFL and everybody's changed a lot since then. But I noticed from my brother, myself, anyone that I've ever known that suffered multiple concussions back in the day when I was in college, they told me I could never play football again after I saw the three top neurologists at the state at the University of Utah. They did brain scans. They could see that multiple concussions in my head. I believe there were seven bruises on my brain that had not healed yet from the CAT scans. They told me about how each concussion you get, if your brain doesn't heal, you're more susceptible to get another one. And they usually link it, I don't know the case of Tua, but they link it to early childhood head trauma. When I was about 2.5, 3 years old, I fell out of a big like family traveling van out of a, like I was just sitting there. Someone opened the door, fell asleep, leaning against the door, fell out, hit my head on the curb, cracked my skull open. And so because of that, I got a concussion. Well, ever since then, every time I hit my head, BMX biking, football, I just kept on getting more and more concussions. Like I said, I don't know his history, but you can see in the recent history of football, last time I checked, I don't know if this is accurate to today, but this was accurate about 10 years ago. Every concussion you get, you need about a full year for your brain to heal before you take another shot like that. The problem is when you're in a game like football, I mean, how can you avoid that, right? They try to make the, you know, the tackling less violent, which they've done a great job. Obviously, some people don't like that because they like that violence of the game. But when you see this side of it, we realize that this is a big issue. But today we want to talk about specifically for him.
Yeah.
And our thoughts and what we see about it and share our own input on it. So when you were watching that, you obviously got skirmish, stuff like that. But let's talk about from a personal level. Everybody's telling him like, hey, he needs to hang it up. He needs to put it away.
Yeah.
Right. And who knows? Maybe it gets taken from him. Maybe the NFL and the doctors come in because this just happened. Maybe they come in and they say, hey, man, we love you, brother, but like we got to keep you safe. And so maybe it's not even going to be up to his decision. But why don't you tell me, Kenneth, how much of a player's identity of who they are is wrapped around that role? And also, how much do you think there is that pressure to bring honor and glory to your family? So you as a as an individual athlete, the pressure to not want to hang it up, especially him. He's at the top of his game. He's a starting quarterback. It's not like he's a third stringer and he's not playing. And he's going to say, oh, yeah, it'd be different. It'd be easy to retire then. But when you're the man, it's hard to say all this hard work I've I've done, like, I'm going to let go of that. So what are your thoughts about the personal side for him and the struggle with that? And also maybe if he's carrying struggle from the responsibility to, like, be that guy for his family.
Yeah, it's just thinking from two perspectives. Not only is he a man, he's a young man. He's about 25, 26, somewhere around that range. So obviously, there's still a long time he has to do for a living aspect.
Still got that invincible, I'm invincible type of thing.
Exactly. So I can get through it. I'm this young. I can get through it. Like when we're young, we take more risk than we do when we're older. And from a personal identity standpoint, you know, you think about it. We've probably been playing a game of football since we were like 7 years old. That's all we think about. And to think of ourselves outside of that, and that's something that we've been getting paraded for all our lives, we don't know anything different. Yeah, he's probably doing stuff in the community just to, you know, buy time from other stuff, but his main focal point is football. That's what he's known for in his community. That's what he's known for with his family. And so on the other side, if he does happen to get removed from that, yes, it will stop him from gaining more concussions, but it also, I think, will bring in more, I don't want this to sound bad, it'll bring more issues, like mentally, because he's going to think suicidal stuff. Like, who am I now? Like, I'm become more depressed. Just those aspects of it. So I'm hoping if he does happen to pull himself back, retire, and loses the identity, there's going to be some people there that can help him reform and reshape a new identity so that he won't fall into a deep place that many athletes do, and not knowing, like, what in the world do I do with the rest of my life?
Yeah, I'm glad you brought that up about the mental health side, because it's well documented that when someone has a concussion, they're more sensitive, they're more emotional and hypersensitive to their emotions. Mm-hmm. If any of our listeners, I know you've seen it, when someone gets a concussion in football, if they're not knocked out and conscious like that, mm-hmm. and you can see something's wrong with them, the doctors will give some tests to kind of see if they're okay. If they determine that they're not okay to go back in the game, they take their helmet.
Yep.
And the reason why is because it's happened a lot in college. It happened to me in high school one time where I got a concussion. It's called being out cold on your feet. Mm. So you're consciously out cold, but you're still walking around like a robot. Mm-hmm. And I try to go back in the game without a helmet on. Mm. No referee is going to let the game go on if someone doesn't have a helmet on, right? Like, and so that's the thing that they're saying, no, you cannot like do that. Mm-hmm. So they take the helmet away from you. But the mental and emotional side from it, again, I'm not wishing on this, and I know you're not predicting anything, but the chances of him having mental and emotional struggles, even right now, even if he doesn't get forced mm-hmm. to not play football and he has to make that decision on his own, it's very high. In fact, one of the issues that people struggle with when it comes to CTE, and if you're not familiar with CTE, it's the degenerative brain disease that mm-hmm. comes from head traumas. And they can't really test to see how bad your CTE is until after you die. Yeah. Oh. So famously, let's look on behind us on the wall. For those of you watching this, you can see it. But if you're not watching this and you're just listening to the podcast, I have a memorial, very special Junior Seau jersey. Junior Seau died by suicide. Mm-hmm. It was well documented that he had serious concussions. They did a ESPN 30 for 30 on him, mm-hmm. and they shared some of his journal entries about him talking about what was wrong with his brain. He was struggling, but he never opened up and asked for help. Mm. He never sought out help, at least not that anyone knows of. And so his mental and emotional struggles mm-hmm. caused him to become a person that nobody knew.
Yeah.
He started taking more risks in his life. He was spending money in ways that he never did before. He was doing things that were just out of character to him. Mm. Come to find out, it's because he had this serious degenerative disease with his brain from these concussions. And so I worry about Tua on that side. Mm. I worry about on that side where it's like, you're supposed to make a decision about your life, but you're not in the best place to make that decision.
That's true.
And so working with people that, you know, are suicidal all the time, and unfortunately, that's just my profession, mm-hmm. right? But when I talk to people that are suicidal, they should not be driving the vehicle of mm-hmm. their life at that moment. Now, when you're talking to someone that has had a lot of concussions, they're mentally, emotionally not there. If they've had like the way they normally be, if they've had multiple concussions in subsequent years and it's becoming a more constant thing, mm-hmm. yeah, you got to deal with the identity issue.
Yeah.
But you have to make a serious life decision when you're not in the best place to make mm-hmm. that decision. I just know that every relationship has an expiration date.
For sure.
I don't think you're going to sit here and tell him he needs to retire.
Right.
However, we look at that video and it says a lot itself. I mean, to watch someone do that fencing like she talked about locked up, I'm cringing because last time that happened to me was at a local restaurant here in Utah. Mm. I had a heart condition, didn't know I had a heart condition. I blacked out and I fell back and I hit my head on the marble floor, cracked my skull, and I locked up. Like, you know, when you see a UFC fighter locked up and they're just holding their hands up like they're fighting. Yep. I was like this, just locked up for like almost a minute. And my friend that was with me was scared. All the patrons there freaked out. I know the restaurant was like, please don't sue us. And I never sued them because it wasn't their fault.
Yeah.
But I say that because when you have experienced something like that, or if you're a parent watching a child, I mean, I can't imagine what their what his parents are going through, what his family and friends are going through. So when you watch it happen, it's easy for us to say, quit, quit, quit.
Yeah.
But I found out something reading about a book by the name of Tribe by Sebastian Younger. He talked about war veterans that came home from, he was following special operations, Green Berets, Navy SEALs, when they're out in wartime situations. He said the number one determining factor of how bad their PTSD was, how bad their depression was, how suicidal they were when they came back from war, according to the statistics, had nothing to do with how much action that they saw when they're in the battlefield. It had to do with how they were received when they came home. So what I'm thinking, I want you to know what you think about it. What I'm thinking about, I think it's going to be dependent a whole lot more on how people come at him and how people treat him about this decision, as opposed to like, I get it when you're scared, like you need to stop. Like a typical parent's be like, knock that off, knock that off.
Sure.
But when your kid gets older, it's like, you can't make those calls for them no more.
Right.
You know? So assuming that the NFL doesn't make that call and it's going to be up to him, I think that should be taken into consideration that his family, his support people around him got to support his decision.
Yep.
And at the same time, not try to pressure him to making a decision, but let him know all the attributes he has going on with him in his life, how great of a father he is.
Yep.
Whatever he is that he is already a professional at in other areas, to really double down on those and point those out to him. Because I know from one, like me being a man, and I know you've had to hang up, you know, the football thing, and that's a hard thing to do. I know that it's like, you just want to still be the man, but not for the ego.
Right.
It's, well, I mean, it's partly for the ego, but it's really for your family. Being part Samoan myself, I mean, you playing the NFL, oh my gosh. You are like, everybody just looks up to you. Like you show people that they can get out of a tough situation. A lot of people get out of the hood, get out of bad poverty situations because one family member did it. So then you can tell your cousins, your nephews, like, hey, listen, if you go to school, you work hard, you could be like him too. And so I think that's a big thing, that if they focus more on him and his strengths as a person, it might be able to help him see. To me, it's pretty clear that the relationship that his brain has with football is expired, even though the relationship with his talent in football and his relationship with body, the overall body, is not expired.
I'm wondering if, you know, when we look at it from a landscape of it will be viewed as him, I wonder if he's taking it in as if it's viewed as him quitting. Like, does Hat have anything like, man, I don't want to seem like I'm quitting on it. Like, even though I'm going through this.
Quitting
on
his team?
Yeah, quitting on his team, quitting on, you know, because like you mentioned, there's someone that's going to be looking up to him. Well, if I don't, so I can make it through this, then what's it going, you know what I'm saying? I wonder if that's playing a factor for him. Like, if you look at a person like DeMar Hamlin who tackled him, like, if he didn't overcome that.
Well, tell people who DeMar Hamlin is, because some of our listeners may not. Yes. We got a lot of moms listening who may not be big football fans. So
DeMar Hamlin is a safety for the Buffalo Bills who last year, I believe it was, came into contact with an individual and on the field died for 1 minute, I believe it
had
was.
Had a heart attack.
Had a heart attack and died 1 minute on the field. And going through his journey, you know, people saying, no, you should hang it up. You should stop. You should quit. But him, he was like, man, this is me. This, like, football is me. And so he overcame, and he's still obviously playing in the league.
He was the one that made that tackle.
The one that made the tackle. And so, like, looking at it from that point of view, is it like him trying to show himself that he can overcome this? Like, you know what I'm saying? So I'm trying to look at it from another lens, too.
I bet you nobody on that field felt it as bad as DeMar Hamlin.
Right. Oh, my gosh.
Because he was the one that hit him, and he was watching, like, I saw, like, the longer click. You could see him. He was like, you could tell he was affected by, like, watching the guy that he just hit. Like, man, I went through that myself. And now I'm watching something that he's just playing a game, but he was the one that hit him, you know?
And it's crazy. If you look at the hit, it wasn't really like DeMar was trying to, like, knock him out or anything. It was just like
kind of shoulder,
very simple. And I know he's feeling the brunt of it because he's like, man, I'm the one that made the contact, like you mentioned. But I'm wondering if that's playing a factor with him, too. Just thinking about, man, I don't want to seem like I quit. You know what I'm saying? Like, yes, I have this injury because he mentioned it. he already thought about retiring before, and he's showing himself like, man, you know what? I can overcome. I can make it through this. So I'm wondering if this season was that redemption season for him to be like, oh, I can make it through. And so I'm just trying to figure out what mind games is he playing within himself in regards to, you know, how he sees this tragic event. Is it something that he looks at he's going to overcome, or is it something that he can probably be like, you know what? I have my time. I can remove myself from it.
You know, I'm going to say something very bold, and, you know, I don't know Tua, so, you know, if anyone knows Tua and you send this to him, hopefully he hears where I'm coming from in a positive way, because it's not throwing any shade or trying to be, you know, critical of him whatsoever. Selfishly, I hope he becomes the spokesperson for the dangers of concussions in football, because I know you and I have talked about this before, and I'm going to give big props to Samoans. In fact, recently on YouTube, I just saw a video that came out about how Samoans are like the percentage of a chance for you to go to the NFL if you're of Samoan descent is ridiculously higher than any other population. Like they said, like it's the size of a small city, how many Samoans there are. And that small city has produced more NFL players than before. Wow. You played with a lot of Samoans. Yeah. I'm part Samoan and played a lot of Samoans. But one thing that I know for without a doubt, every Samoan on every team is a huge influence to every person on that team.
That's real.
Samoans aren't really like, if you know the Samoans dudes be talking nonstop, never shut their mouth. They're more like the guys that didn't say a lot, but did a lot.
Yeah, you don't want to be on their bad side.
Yeah, you don't see a lot of people jumping in some Samoan dude's face. Like, what's up? You want to throw down? Because the Samoans that I grew up with, they're not as good as talking as they are at hitting.
Yeah.
You know?
You don't want to be on the opposite side
of that. But think about that quiet confidence. He's, I mean, if everybody knows a story about this young man, he's a good dude.
Very good dude.
Like everybody likes this kid. This kid's been, I mean, when he's had bad season, but throwing shade on him, he just sits there, just takes it. Like he's just so, you could tell he comes from a good family. You could tell he's been raised and just with a lot of respect. Selfishly, someone from that works with mental health, there's so many young kids out there that are seeing the dollar signs and seeing all the things that come from it. Yep. I'm pretty sure he's got enough money to get him set for the rest of his life.
Yep.
I'm pretty sure that if his career was to end right now, his platform could, and I really hope it does, even if he doesn't stop playing right now at some point, that he can be that soft-spoken person that can tell people his story and his experience. Because there's a lot of other NFL players that maybe are barely hanging on a roster, that their head's ringing, that their ears are buzzing, and they just don't want to let it go. Because sometimes we don't want to look on the expiration date on that milk carton.
That's real.
We don't want to see that it may make us sick if we keep on drinking. It's like, no, I can push it one more day. We sniff it, like, smells a little sour, but I can keep on drinking it. I keep on drinking it. That's what's happening with a lot of these players. And I got to give a shout out to my boy, Keith Embre, a guy that had graduated at the University of Utah right before I got there. He's now works at the University of Utah. Shout out, Keith. What's up? He wrote a paper. So I'm a freshman in the study hall, and I'm sitting there like, not the brightest bulb in the tree, trying to do my homework. And this guy's like working on his PhD or master's thesis, right? And I go, hey, Keith, what are you working on? He's like, I'm working on this, I believe it's a master's thesis. So I'm working on this master's thesis. And I go, what is it? And this is the first time I had ever thought of this. Now, mind you, I'm 18, 19 years old. Never thought of this before. He's like, I'm working on a master's thesis about the difficulty with the transition of athletes when they've been playing a sport their whole entire life, when they're done with their career, transitioning into regular life. Because your whole entire life, you're the man or you're the woman, you're this person everybody looks up to, and you're special, and all of a sudden, now you're just a regular person. And with college athletes, we didn't make money, right? But now with pro athletes, not only are you just a regular person, now you got to go back to like, well, now what do I do for a living? Like, how do I make money? You're not going to start any job and they pay you $5 million just to like, you know, start working as a cash register right off the jump. So I bring this up with Keith Roth, because when he shared that with me, as my career went on and I kept on getting the concussions, I lied about my concussions. And all you athletes out there that are listening to this that have lied about your concussion so that you can play, I get it. And I'm telling you from an old dude, an old head, you only get one brain. And your brain can only have your card punched so many times before you run out of holes to punch on the card. Right? There's only so many times you can punch that card and it's going to work again. The lights start to shut off really easily. Mm-hmm. And that's also another fact that we find out about concussions is that the more concussions you get, the more likely you're to get another one.
Yep.
And they say the same thing with boxers and UFC fighters. Mm-hmm. Like in the beginning of their career, they're taking shots, they're getting beat up. And then once they get knocked out again, before you know it, someone just clips them and they go to sleep because that's a defense mechanism of our brain. Mm-hmm. Our brain's not made to take shots like that.
Right.
So when someone starts getting lights out concussions, that's literally a notification.
Yeah.
So I guess what I'm saying, to be more bold, Tua, your body and your brain is telling you something, but it's not telling you it's time to retire. It's telling you it's time to become a professional in something else.
Mm-hmm.
It's telling you it's time to take your culture, your heritage, everything that you represent that made you a great athlete, and see that you're going to be great at something else. Now, if you choose to be an advocate for head trauma and stuff like that, I think that'd be great. But I'm pretty sure your skills and your talents extend far past your athletic ability.
Mm-hmm.
So I feel like that time has expired. Kenneth, you know, from personal experience, we went and talked today to a bunch of people.
Yeah.
And you shared with people, if you don't mind filling, you know, our listeners on this, you shared with people that, you know, when you weren't able to fulfill your promise to your mom mm-hmm. to play in the NFL and things didn't work out, you had multiple career-ending injuries that mm-hmm. you kept on fighting back from. I want you to tell everybody, like, from an athlete's perspective, so moms out there, dads out there, people listening to this, they can see how it's hard to put that away.
Yeah, it's definitely hard. And we got to think about it, too. Once we start playing the football at, like, 19 years old and we get to this age of 25, we've been doing something for 15 years. And if you're going into another field, you just got to remember that's the same repetition, the same type of cadence and consistency that you need to be great in something else. So it's not really just starting over. The beautiful thing is when you do shift different careers or whatever, you're not really starting over from ground zero where you were at 9 years old to where you're at 25, 24, whatever it is. You're really starting from your foundation that you built through those 15 years. So maybe it instead of when you start off a new career, you have these transferable skills that can allow you to be, instead of at level zero, you're going to be at level five and maybe have five more levels to go to level 10, right? So you're not really starting from the bottom. And so the one thing I always tell the kids now, well, even college kids, is once you do make that shift in identity, I heard a great lesson from one of the guys, you know, my mom will say it right now. So back in 2013, when I got my second season into injury, I got surgery and went to class the following week. And when I went to class, there was someone right below me. It was in a lecture where it was like a movie theater type, and someone
like stadium seating type.
And the student in front of me had this red book on their desk, and I was like, "Dang, that looked pretty cool." And I tapped him on the shoulder, like, "Hey, what book is that?" And he was like, "Oh, this book. Oh, it's The Art of War." And I said, "Oh, cool." He asked me, "Have you ever read it?" I said, "No, I never read Art of War. I never heard of it at all." He said, "How about you read it?" And I said, "Cool." So I took that book, went to study hall later that night. I was scanning through it, and then the following week, when I seen him in class the other day, I was so pumped to tell him. I was like, "Man, dude, this Art of War book is so dope, man. I love it." And I was like, "Man, there's this one quote that really resonated with me." He was like, "Really? What is it?" I said, "Man, it says, 'Plan for what is difficult while it is easy, and do great things while they are small.'" And so for me, the thing that I thought about when I thought about that situation was like, man, the hardest part for athletes to do is thinking about what's next. So while it's difficult to do it while it's easy, like while you're in the sport, like start preparing yourself for the after so that when that transition does come, it's easy. You're like, "Okay, I'm just going to hop in this other vehicle to get to my destination," right? So you have more vehicles in your garage to choose from rather than this being the only beat down Corolla with a garbage bag on the window and you just holding on for dear life. You actually have two vehicles now. Once this goes away, you can move to the next one. And so for me, that's what I had to do. And I remember after that conversation, he said, "Man, bingo, I love it." He said, "Do something else." He said, "Go home and do this exercise." And I was like, "What's this exercise?" He said, "There's this concept called Ikigai." And I was like, "What the heck is Ikigai?" He was like, "So Iki stands for life, and then Gai stands for purpose. And if you put them together, it stands for life's purpose."
Yeah.
And he said, "What I want you to do is write down five things you love, five things you're good at, five things you can be paid for, and then five things the world needs, and figure out how all of those things align. And in the middle of all that is your purpose. And so once you do that, that's what you need to start aiming for." And so ever since then, that's why it was kind of like easy for me to transition into things, because I started working on that stuff while I was in college. And then once I got done, I already knew what I wanted to do. Now it's time to put the reps and the consistency in it in order to achieve it.
You know, it's interesting that you said at that particular time of your life, and also it's even though he's a little bit older when you mm-hmm. were going through that time, In psychology, we learned that around 25 years old is when the prefrontal cortex in your brain is pretty much usually done with its development. Mm. And that part of the brain that develops is your long-term decision-making and your ability to plan for the future. So he's in the right position to do that. Mm-hmm. And one thing that I'd suggest, Shaquille O'Neal, I heard him on a podcast a long time ago. He said, whenever he has big, major life decisions, I don't know if it was 12 people, but for some reason, 12 sounds right. So there's 12 people in his life that he can't make any life decision with unless he consults with them. He says, here's what I'm looking at. What are your thoughts? And he would take everybody's feedback and add that to his own experience, you know, things that he was thinking. And so I think Tua should do exactly what you talked about. And also pick those people in your life, say, obviously, you know what's going on in my life. Obviously, right. you know, I got to make a big decision. And I think it'd be more powerful if he made the decision than if the NFL made the decision for him.
Yes.
And so if he was, and I'm not saying that's what he should do because I don't know the legalities of it.
Right.
But I just know as a person, when you feel like you're making your choice and you own that choice, your choice, versus if it's taken from you, right? Then that leaves that's you with like big. A little bit more of like, man, like
I left the mom.
Like grief, you know what I mean? And you're having a grieving that situation. So like Shaq did is he goes around, he calls it like his board of directors. So if he went, it could be maybe an agent, attorney, his mom, his dad, an uncle, or a high school football coach, and just had them all weigh in on it, I think that would really weigh heavy on him. Yes. And also, it'd help him see that he doesn't have to make this decision alone.
Right.
Because if it's on him, it's going to feel like the world's on his shoulders. Mm-hmm. How many people does he financially support in his life? Ooh. I bet you there's more than one, right?
For sure.
I've never known an NFL player that doesn't want to help out their family, especially the Polynesian culture. They're so tight-knit. It's that's like, true. Hey, auntie, you, well, your car busted? Dude, I got you.
I got
you.
Know,
I'm like, you get to that position wanting to help. So maybe that's his fear that he won't be able to be of great assistance, help to his family and to his friends. Big. But I'm telling you, you got so much more that you can help by being one of the few people that can make that decision at the height of your career and be able to like, hey, I'm going to ride off into the sunset.
Yes.
I'm going to enjoy the life with my family, enjoy life with my kids. And I'm going to take my pain and turn it into some sort of purpose so that I can move forward in my life. And I just think that'd be a great story. Like I could see this be a great 30 for 30 on ESPN.
Yes.
Like a great story because Junior Seau, who is also Samoan, love Junior, honor him. But that old school generation, they didn't make that choice. It didn't even seem that was even an option to quit because they saw it as quitting. They didn't see it as transitioning or evolving into another stage of their life. Well, you guys, thank you for following us here on OG Therapy. Thanks, Kay, for coming here. We're going to record a little bit more while he's in town. Thank you to everybody that's been following us on Instagram, social media. And you can find us on Instagram on OG.therapy. You can find me at David_KOZLOWSKI_. Kay, where can they find you?
You can find me at KScott_2. Very simple and easy for you.
And on YouTube on OG Therapy as well. And until next time, be cool.
Mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger for thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.